minutes, but speaking of
how it went down. Now time to sum it all up. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Recap everything you need to know about this game right now. Now here's your host, your analyst, and your MC for the evening.
Make some noise!
Justin Garcia.
All right, all around, not a good night here in Milwaukee as the Bucks this time trade their third quarter woes for second quarter woes. That's the area where the Bulls really started to take over in this game. Chicago outscoring the Bucks in the second quarter, 34-21. Third quarter was really the Chris Middleton show, but the fourth quarter was the Chris Middleton injury. And we heard from Coach Mike Budenholzer as soon as he opened up his post-game comments. It is an MCL sprain for Chris Middleton. He will have an MRI tomorrow. They'll await the results of that, and we'll see where it goes from there. So two injuries of note in this game for the Bucks. Chris Middleton, which certainly sounds like it has the potential to be much more long-term than Bobby Portis, who left the game after taking a shot to the face and did not return. From the sounds of it, from Coach Mike Budenholzer, Bobby Portis should be good to go for Friday's Game 3, but with Chris Middleton, may not be the case as we now hold our breath to see what the status is of the Bucks All-Star in Chris Middleton. 855-616-1620 is the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line to get in touch with us tonight on the program on Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. And really the place to start is the Chris Middleton injury and what it means for the Bucks' potential playoff run. For most of this game, you watched and said this: something looks off with this team. We said that in Game 1. We chalked it up to the offense not settling in. As Drew Holiday said, it was just rust. This team hadn't played. The starters, the regulars, hadn't played in 8 days. Sunday against the Cavaliers was their final game, but the only player that has seen minutes in the postseason playing in that game was Javon Carter. So for the rest of the guys, it had been 8 days since they last played. We heard from Drew Holiday, the reason for the slow start was just rust. Now you have another game where the offense started to look better as the game progressed. But throughout the course of this game, it was more than that. That, again, we saw ups and downs with the offense. We saw the defense that could not come up with answers for DeMar DeRozan, at least not until the very end. Not until the very end, when all of a sudden we saw more and more double teams on DeMar DeRozan, and the Bucks defense started to take the ball out of his hands or force the ball out of his hands in moments when the Bulls had less skilled offensive players on the floor surrounding DeRozan. But ultimately, DeMar DeRozan just made shots when the Bulls needed him to make those shots. And the Chicago Bulls have tied up this series at a game apiece now, stealing home court advantage with the series heading to Chicago now, Friday night. 855-616-1620, the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line to get in touch with us on the show. And I'm sure as most of you have already started to search MCL sprain, and what is the timetable for a return from that type of injury? We've all started to look into that already. But that is the news that we will wait to see what it means for this team moving forward. And it's Game 2. Not the way we want to open the show, with trying to play Dr. Google and seeing how long do you miss if you have an MCL sprain. But Greg Matzik joins me now. And you were down there when Coach Budenholzer answered the question of MCL sprain. And I think as soon as he said that, just hearing MCL period, I think we all thought, ooh, yeah, that's kind of what I was afraid of.
There's a Giannis MCL sprain, and then there's a everybody else in the world MCL sprain. So, I think normal injury, I don't know if he's able to play the rest of this series, but we'll see. I never really saw a replay, if I'm being honest. I was pining to try and find a replay or something just to see if it was a buckling or, what exactly happened. I honestly, I didn't see it. So
it just looked awkward.
Yeah, it's it forced by contact? Was it just kind of on its own? Right, Giannis is obviously was influenced, but we'll see. I mean, the Bucks still had to get creative with they're doing a four guard lineup at times, and you know Giannis was playing the five, and it worked. I mean, the Bulls had never seen that before from the Bucks, and it allowed Milwaukee to get back into it. But now you're still talking about trying to devise a way to beat this Bulls team, a scrappy Bulls team, without one of your best players. And for as quiet as he was in the first half, you know, he was a big part of that third quarter surge that helped bring the Bucks back in. He knocked down all four of his threes in the third quarter. So he's certainly a big piece to the puzzle. I think Bobby sounds like he'll be back sometime soon. I know all too well about eye injuries lately, and he's got an eye abrasion, which I don't think is as bad as an eyeball laceration, which I had. So I think Bobby's going to be back sooner than later, but momentum in the NBA, man, it's crazy. Like every day, every series, I'm reminded of how quickly it comes and goes. You know, the Suns are feeling great. They're beating up on the Pelicans. Then Booker goes down to the hamstring, and they get smoked on their home floor. Happens here tonight. The Bucks get off to a sluggish start. They work hard to get back into it. Can't corral a couple balls late. And now Chris Middleton's going to miss a game or two or maybe more. So it comes back quickly, but it leaves quickly as well every year in the NBA playoffs.
The Chris Middleton injury is not the reason why this team lost the game. It certainly didn't help that he was the guy that was really kind of pulling you back in the third quarter. And he left with 2 seconds left in the third quarter when he picked up his fourth foul. The Bulls closed out. I believe they hit two free throws when he left, and then they scored the first 9 points of the fourth quarter. That he was the guy tonight. It wasn't so much Giannis that you could kind of look at and say, oh, the non-Chris minutes have kind of been a problem for this team. But in the lead up to that, a 9-0 start for the Bulls, where we talked about, man, this team just didn't look crisp. And Drew Holiday said, well, it's just the layoff and it's rust that we were dealing with. And then you come out where, I mean, maybe it's, well, we wish we would have had 1 day off instead of 2 days off. But the start that they had, where they had four turnovers in their first 7 possessions, and the Bulls scored the first 9 points of the game, where you just kind of scratch your head and think, I thought it was rust last, so what is it today?
That's a great question.
And we're both searching for the answers.
Well, the Bucks started off hot in game one, and then their end-of-game shooting percentages were terrible. Tonight they started off terrible, and their end-of-game shooting percentages are actually pretty good. But the common trait here now is 40 turnovers in two games. Like, that is just abhorrent. Like, you're not going to win series with that. And that's just, and it's carelessness too, Justin. That's the weird part. Happened a couple of times. You get a transition opportunity. Pat throws it to Dan Smicek at the scorer's table. You know, Drew and West, it can't hook up here late in the fourth quarter. You need a bucket. Every possession is sacred. He just chucks it out of bounds. He expects West to come a little further up the line on the three-point line, and he doesn't. And they're just sitting there staring at each other. So that kind of stuff you don't expect to see, and it's always magnified late in the fourth quarter of a close game. But 40 turnovers in two games is just stupid bad.
You had 15 turnovers today, and 13 of them were from Giannis, Chris, and Drew. And it was a similar story in game one where, I mean, Chris Middleton had 7 turnovers in that game alone, and that was the most he's had in a playoff game in his career. He did it one time last year in the run. I believe it was game 6 against the Hawks, where that was the bad part, but the good was him just going in takeover mode on offense. But turnovers, two games in a row, as you pointed to. And look, part of that is Alex Caruso is a really good defensive player.
He's played well.
And the Bulls are a much different team when Alex Caruso is on the floor offensively and defensively. And I think in game one, you saw Alex Caruso taking on Giannis a little bit more and kind of confusing him, and him taking that challenge head on, and the Bulls using more and more doubles. This time it was just more aggressive double teaming on Giannis, and it wasn't so much the Giannis turnovers. To me, what really stood out was just, you know, you mentioned that turnover that Drew had, but the chemistry between Drew Holiday and Wesley Matthews specifically, where there was 2 or 3 times in this game that, I mean, the turnover is on Drew Holiday, but it's clear Drew's expecting Wesley Matthews to be in the corner, and Wesley Matthews is a little bit down the line, and Drew's just passing to the spot.
It was kind of an erratic game for Drew. He hit a couple big threes in the fourth quarter. But, you know, he hits 1-3, and then he's got another attempt. It's a bunny attempt at the rim, and he can't get it to go. I think he even had officially a tip-in attempt that rattled out. So 2 bunny opportunities close. He couldn't seal it off. it kind of looked like he got a little out of control in the third quarter, going to the rim, maybe trying to draw contact as the Bucks were trying to, you know, get themselves back into it. You know, I know how hard he works on the defensive end, so there's going to be some moments that don't look great on offense, but it was just a kind of an up-and-down day for him. And, you know, with Middleton on the bench, you had to find that other scoring threat, and it really was kind of Brook Lopez again, right? I mean, another good night for him, aside of what Giannis was able to do. But now you have to kind of regroup, so it is sort of back to the drawing board. If you consider that Chris Middleton is going to miss some time, you get the feeling that Bobby Portis is hopefully going to be back at least for game three, if not game four for sure. You know, how does it manipulate your starting lineup? How does it alter your rotations? Not a lot of bench production tonight at all. When you miss Bobby Portis, that certainly is going to be affected. So it's kind of a back to the drawing board sort of feel after this one, once they get the injury situation sorted out. But you know, there's a lot of work to do now, right? It's just it kind of feels like you got to go back uphill, and now you got to steal one in Chicago in order to get that home court advantage negated.
Now, you got to steal one in Chicago, and you probably have to do that without Chris Middleton. And in these two games, if we just look at Giannis, Chris, and Drew Holiday, 38 assists, 29 turnovers between that duo in these two games.
How many field goal makes do they have, right? Do they have more turnovers than field goals made?
It's up there.
It's got to be pretty close, which is not where you want to be.
It is unbelievable, the turnovers that we saw. And four turnovers in the first seven possessions of this game for the team.
I just
kept thinking,
unbelievable.
How is this possible? 855-616-1620. Bulls take game two and even the series at a game apiece. More after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
It's here on...
Thinking of...
Bulls doing a better job than the Bucks right now, attacking the paint. They have the advantage, 16-12.
Giannis trying to do something about that. He slicks past his man on a little Euro step and lays it in with a finger roll. And with that, it puts Giannis as the all-time leader in postseason points for Milwaukee as he has passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for a second time in as many weeks.
That was the good for Giannis, but the bad, the Bulls take game two here at Fiserv Forum, 114-110. And, Giannis becomes the Bucks' playoff leading scorer. And a couple of minutes later in the game, he would have his 92nd block, which is number one in the franchise list as well. So it's certainly been a big year for Giannis, and a year where we've seen him become the all-time leading scorer in playoff history and the overall franchise leading scorer. But... you know, I'm not sure how much of it was what the Bulls were doing versus something just looks different with Giannis ever since he became the leading scorer. And you think of those back-to-back games that he had against the Sixers and the Nets where he dominated. And that's really when the talk intensified of, hey, Giannis for MVP. And he's right up there with Nikola Jokic and with Joel Embiid. But since then, it seems like it's been a different guy.
There were some spurts tonight where it looked like, okay, here we go. He is just an absolute bulldog. He misses a free throw, collects his own board, and then flushes it home. Then I think it was DeRozan on the other end. He swats him at the baseline, charges downhill, and gets to the free throw line again. That was like the spot where you maybe push to the edge of your seat. But it felt a little quiet getting to that point. And I even go back to game one, Justin, to kind of accentuate your point. If you look at the box score, you think, well, Giannis had a good night. And it wasn't vintage Giannis, even though the stat line was pretty well stuffed. In fact, he was off the floor for portions of the fourth quarter late, you know, with the Bucks trying to hang on to their lead because of foul trouble. So he got sort of played off the floor with those back-to-back offensive fouls within a minute's time. It did feel like he was trying to force the action a little bit in the fourth quarter at a time where you had to. I mean, it was really crunch time without Chris Middleton on the floor especially. That consistent outside threat was gone. It was Giannis getting to the free throw line. So he ends up one assist shy of a pretty impressive triple-double. But I wouldn't have expected 33. I guess he spent a lot of time at the free throw line, so maybe that's where that total gets inflated a little bit. I do credit the Bulls, though. They are packing the paint, and it feels like some of the open looks the Bucks are getting, it just aren't going. Percentage-wise, it's okay tonight, but some key opportunities that they missed, especially late after they got off to that sluggish start. Felt like Brook and West were kind of keeping him in it. Giannis tries a three in the second half. He comes down after the Bucks are working themselves back in and airballs. So it had that kind of yin and yang to it tonight. where the overall stat line looks, you know, pretty solid. You're not going to look to Giannis as the reason the Bucks fell apart tonight. There's a lot of contributing factors. But if it's possible to be somewhat quiet with 33-18-9, we hold him to a very, very high bar. There's no doubt about that.
I was about to say, I mean, we're saying, well, he doesn't seem like he's been the same guy recently, and we're saying this for a guy that almost had a 35-20-10 stat line, basically. So
I wouldn't say he's the reason they lost tonight, that's for sure. I mean, there's some other contributing factors, turnovers, as we talked about, and just, you know, I don't know if it's a – I don't think the Bucks are taking the Bulls lightly. I really don't. I do think the Bulls are a pretty good team. In the long run, in a 7-game series, no, I don't think they match up well with the Bucks. Now, the injury adds a different wrinkle to that whole discussion. But they played better basketball tonight. And it was a Herculean effort for the Bucks to even get back into it. They had two second-half runs to make things really interesting, and the Bulls answered each time. So credit to Chicago for doing what teams have done to Milwaukee in the past. The Celtics did it. The Hawks did it. Win in Milwaukee in the early portion of a series.
I don't think they're taking them lightly either, and I think we all kind of took the Bulls lightly and joked, well, this is the team that you want to play. And, you know, obviously what the Bulls did in the second half of the season, we've all mentioned and seen the record that the Bulls have against the top, what, six or eight teams in the NBA, that I think everybody has kind of taken the Bulls lightly and said, this is the team that you should shoot for. I don't think that's the case in the locker room. But I do think this is probably a tired team with the Bucks. I mean, if you go back to last year, they played the 72-game season. 67 of those 72 games were played in the calendar year of 2021. Then you had the playoff run that you had. Then you had this season starting. Then you have these games. And now you're in the postseason that if we look back at the last, 16 months, it's a lot of basketball that this team has played, more so than you're used to playing in a regular season because of how the schedule has been contorted because of what's gone on the last 2 years. And for teams like the Bucks and the Suns, who went as deep as they did in the postseason, it's a lot. And I think that's a part of it. This is a team that had 2 months off in the offseason for Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. They didn't even have 2 months off. And maybe they can serve some of that energy as best they could in the regular season. But it's still an 82-game regular season. And I think we're seeing a team that's just kind of like, well, I know they had an 8-day break before the playoffs began, but overall, I think it's a team that's just kind of tired.
I don't think it's a surprise that Brook Lopez has looked fresh.
Right.
Right? You talk about a guy who's missed 68 games, and what did he play? 10, 12, somewhere around there, maybe a dozen or more games toward the end of the season. So he's probably feeling pretty good about himself, and I think it's reflected in his stat line from games 1 and 2. He's been a really key player, I think, here for the Bucks, and kind of saved the day in game 1. But he's the one guy, if you look at this entire team, and it is a veteran team. I know people used to think the Bucks were a young team. They're not so much built that way right now. It's veterans getting the bulk of the minutes, especially after Wesley Matthews moved into the starting lineup. But you're right. I don't think there's ever been a more demanding 20, 21 months on a team than what the Bucks have gone through here. There's no doubt. I don't think they will use it as an excuse. But there is kind of a flatness here. And I hope they didn't peak in that, you know, middle portion of March when I heard you talk about it, and it was well articulated how difficult the schedule was for the Bucks in March and how they shined through a very challenging schedule as you started to ramp up intensity toward the postseason. I don't want to say it's lost here, but it's been erratic, to say the least, here the first two games.
So for the calendar year of 2021, they played 127 games.
Yeah, that's heavy lift.
That's a game every 3 days that you're playing. That, I mean, it's a lot, and that's not even covering all the regular season games from January 1 until, 8 days ago, 10 days ago, and now these two postseason games. It's a lot that this team has played, and I think that's what you're kind of seeing. Now, what this team can do differently, that's a different discussion. You mentioned Brook Lopez. He has continued to be a bright spot for this team, and I agree that I don't think it's a surprise that he looks pretty fresh after basically getting to rest for the duration of the regular season. The offense is starting to come around, and something I talked about with Ben Brust on the pregame show, that just some of the timing things are what you were waiting for Brook Lopez offensively, and those are kind of starting to come into form now. That little big man floater that he's got right around the free throw line is starting to look better and better. and he just overall looks more comfortable offensively, and we've seen that with his offensive numbers in the two games of this series. So that's huge. But when I look at the stat sheet from tonight and I see Drew Holiday struggled for most of this game and finished with 15 points, but it was a struggle to get there. 6 of 16. This is two straight games where Drew's offense hasn't been there. Chris was great in the third quarter. Giannis and Brooke, we mentioned how good they were overall. But outside of that, there was nothing.
No, nothing from the bench. You had that energy and hustle from Bobby, I thought. Grayson Allen mixed it up a little bit. He got the early minutes off the bench, more so than Pat. And then after Bobby left, it felt like there was a little heart and soul gone. To where I was, you know, paying attention on social media, and people were saying, just stick Thanasis in there for 2-3 minutes. Just something, like just spark this team, energize. That happened a year ago in the postseason, and it did prove to be energetic. He hasn't played in a while, and if anybody wants to know how Serge Ibaka is thought of in this playoff rotation, he is not thought of highly in this playoff rotation. He got 1 minute tonight. That was after the Portis injury, so it is kind of a limited crew. But something's going to have to change here. I mean, if we assume that Chris is going to be out for a period of time, and I'll also assume that Bobby Portis is going to be back, how do you adjust your starting lineup? Is it Pat? Is it Grayson back in? Do you put Bobby into Chris's spot? Like this will be an interesting decision. The Bucks played their best basketball tonight when they went small.
Yeah.
Chris was part of some of those rotations, and then he was not part of some of those rotations after the injury, where Giannis was playing the five, and it was four guards, including Javon Carter, running around on the floor. So, and that worked. But now it's on tape. The Bulls have seen it now. So I'll be curious to see what chess piece Mike Budenholzer moves as it pertains to the starting lineup and how that trickle-down effect affects the bench.
855-616-1620, the number to get in touch with us on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and talk with Daniel in Quantico. You're up.
Hey, guys. Nice program tonight. I see some positives and negatives on this game. Some things that I think they need to do is they need to double on DeRozan more often. We saw when they doubled on DeRozan there later in the game, they were having success in forcing the ball out of his hand and throwing it to other shooters like Caruso, who frankly couldn't hit shots tonight. They need to feed it down low more often. And they got it down to Brook several times there in the end of the game, and he was able to finish, which is what you guys are pointing out with maybe him being more fresh. I think it's just on that final series when they gave up the rebound. I mean, they had Lopez in there. They had Giannis. I think that was something inexcusable, giving up that rebound. But I don't know if this is like something that they could do, but what do you guys think about like sticking Giannis on DeMar DeRozan and maybe letting him guard him as primary defender? I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Daniel. You're not going to put Giannis on him. You'll do it on sequences, but you can't risk Giannis running into foul trouble and being the primary defender and putting that much defensively. You like Giannis as the help defender that can come over. The block shots that we saw tonight, it's because he was able to swoop over and do that. I do agree with the double team, and it was something I mentioned to Ben Bruss during one of the breaks of when I look at the floor and I see the lineup that the Bulls had out there, which at the time it had Tristan Thompson and it had Patrick Williams and DeMar DeRozan, and you look and you see there's two zeros offensively. And I know Patrick Williams hit some shots tonight, but if you're the Bucks, if Patrick Williams beats you, Patrick Williams beats you. If they have those groupings, why aren't you double-teaming DeMar DeRozan and just saying, we'll leave one of those two guys open? And after that timeout, and slowly but surely, they started to do it. The problem is, Billy Donovan was slow to realize it, but Billy Donovan realized, oh, wait, now they're doing this because they don't trust these guys to hit shots. So he made the adjustment. So I think it's something you can certainly go to more than they did, but you have to be careful about the groupings that are on the floor when you do that.
I don't know if anybody his height hits contested twos better in the league
than DeRozan.
Oh my God! Yeah. And then he's got kind of the kind of contact game that drives you nuts. You know what I mean? Where you're standing there straight, and I felt like there was probably three or four instances where Bud could have used the challenge. And credit to him, he used it at the right time, and it overturned a call late on Drew. And I think Drew was called for a foul on DeRozan. I thought Drew hitting.
I was shocked they overturned that.
I was too. I thought maybe there was a little hand flip there. Yeah. Straight up and down, yes. I thought there were other calls that were perhaps a little more egregious throughout the game. But Drew's defense on DeRozan on the final possession. So after all the back and forth runs of the fourth quarter, you're down three with 56.4 left to go, and all you need is a stop, right? Get your stop. Get the ball back. Let's see what extend the game. It's 56.4 seconds left. They're going to have to put up a shot at some point. And a great D by Drew on DeRozan. I mean, he was right there with a hand at his face. He'd been making the contested twos all night. Long rebound. It ends up back in the hands of the Bulls, right? And another shot goes up. And it's a moon ball rebound over Giannis, over Brook, over anybody. The long arms of the law need not apply because the ball was over their heads. I think Vooch may have had a tap out there too. And the Bulls get it again. So and then DeRozan finishes it with a driving layup. So you had two opportunities there. You got the requisite stops. You had an opportunity to get the ball back in your hands and maybe tie the game, you know, with 20, 30 seconds to go, and you just couldn't corral a rebound. So after all the heavy lifting to get you into a good spot, you just couldn't get over the hump. And DeRozan was at the heart of it all. But it was the hustle play by Caruso. It was the back tap by Vucevic, right? I mean, magnified that final minute, that final possession, really, for the Bulls with just under a minute to go.
Well, and on that second reload they had, Pat went to foul DeRozan. They didn't call it. And it looked like he actually fouled him. They didn't call it. But there was around 20 seconds left. And I just remember thinking, you don't have to foul. You can keep playing defense here because the shot clock resets to 14. Play defense, get a stop, and it's still a three-point game, but they didn't call the foul. DeRozan drives the lane and scores, and it's over. But the Caruso rebound where he was just right place at the right time because the Bucks were so concerned on the shooter, that was the backbreaker. And I think that was the first one. But that was the one where you just thought, oh, man, they can't even get that. And then to get a second offensive reload is where you knew, well, this game's over.
That dude was in the right place every time, Caruso. Right, he gets a block on Lopez, and then he assists on a corner three in the very next time down the floor. He just did everything right.
The Bulls just made the plays tonight, and the Bucks made plays, and then we would see turnovers, that they would start to climb that hill, and then they would slowly fall back down. And credit to the Bulls that they made plays. It was funny. During halftime, we were talking with Bill Wennington, and he said, 14-point Bulls lead at halftime, and Bill Wennington told all of us, Bulls are going to blow this lead in the third quarter. Trust me. And we tried to tell him, well, third quarters haven't really been great for the Bucks, Bill, so I think you guys are probably safe with a 14-point lead. And he's like, no, trust me. When it got down to three, we look over, and Bill Wennington is holding up a note against the glass here that just says, Bill is always right. So he saw it coming, but his team made enough plays in the fourth quarter to win it.
Well, the second quarter was a pig for the Bucks tonight. Third quarter, they found a way to get back into it and actually excelled in the third quarter. And the fourth quarter was runs. I mean, I think it got down to 18. 18 was the deficit. And the Bucks had a 15-4 run. The Bulls answered it with a 13-0 run of their own. Another run by the Bucks, another run by the Bulls. I mean, the mountain was steep, and the Bucks climbed it a couple of different times. Just couldn't quite get to the summit.
855-616-1620, the number to get in touch with us on the AccuNet Mortgage Talk and Text Line. When we return, the two injuries from this game. So we can play Dr. Google here and recklessly speculate, when could we possibly see Chris Middleton back? And also, we have somebody here who may know something like what Bobby Portis is going through. So what's the prognosis there? We'll get to that next on Bucks Talk.
You're listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
You receive.
This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
As loud as it's been tonight. Here's a drive from DeRozan trying to silence him. That won't help as Giannis goes lurching out of the weeds to swat that one out of bounds. And with that, he is now the Bucks' all-time shot blocker and the postseason leader.
Well, Giannis, the postseason leading scorer and now the postseason leading shot blocker for the Bucks, but it comes in a losing effort as the Bulls even this series at a game apiece. 855-616-1620. 720 is the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text line. I want to get to what you could reasonably expect in terms of the return and recovery for Chris Middleton and Bobby Portis. But before we do that, let's head to the phone lines and check in with our old pal, Southside James. You're up next, James. How's it going?
It's going okay, but I think I'm sorry to hear the Bucks, you know, lose tonight and lose two players. But I think that the hungerness was there last year, but it isn't this year. I think the thing is that Giannis does have that drive, but you've had Lopez out, you've had a lot of injuries and everything else. This is a different season and everything else. I think the team last year was in a mode or in a thing, in a drive type of thing, where you once you get into something like that for the playoffs and for everything else, like you were saying, like they've lost the first games and in a variety of the different rounds there last year and stuff like that. But I think there was a drive. I think there was a different team, a different attitude, and I think this year the Bucks are overlooking. We're looking past the Bulls. We're looking to play Boston or Brooklyn or whoever is in the next round there. And I think that this is a kind of a wake up call really for the Bucks if they don't regroup or reform their team. The Bucks are gone, and we're going to all have to say, well, like they do with the Packers or like you do with the Brewers. Well, going to have to be back. We're going to see about next year and that, but I don't want to do that right now. I'd rather see the Bucks go and see if they can win another title back to back.
Yeah, thanks for the call, James. And I do agree that they don't have the hunger they did last year, because no team that once you get the championship, not that it's gone, but it's not at the level it was before you got that. Like, once you get there, it goes down a little. And it's not to say you don't have a hunger to repeat and you don't have the hunger to win another title, but it's just not the same once you get that first one. So I think that's certainly a part of it. But you know what? At times in these two games, I think there's moments where maybe not him specifically, but you really miss a guy like a P.J. Tucker that came here last year as the guy that hadn't won a championship but had gone deep in the playoffs and had been through a lot of those battles and seemed to kind of be the Yoda for this team that was like, hey, calm down. This is how we do this, and this is how we'll respond. And he was the veteran guy that a lot of these guys turned to. Granted, if the thought was, well, we won the championship, these guys can be that guy now, it's hard to dispute that. But, I mean, it kind of seems like, what is this team missing? That type of guy. And maybe the intention was it's Wesley Matthews. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that's what stands out the most to me right now.
Well, and you're playing in an Eastern Conference that's better.
It's a lot better, yeah,
than it was a year ago. I think that can, and even a number seven seed in the Chicago Bulls, that's better than most seven seeds, I think, in a given year.
Six seed, but even this
six
team,
seed, pardon
yeah,
me.
The Bulls, you know, if Alex Caruso and the injuries that they had, if they don't encounter that, they're not a six seed. You know, maybe they're probably five, maybe four seed, but that's where the Bulls are if they're not fighting through the injuries that they did in the second half of the season.
No, so it's very true.
It's easy to look at them, and again, like we said at the top of the show, if I understand why this is the team you want to play, but this was still a very good team for large portions of this season. They still have some of those components. Granted, you're not going to see Lonzo Ball, but they still have – it's not a pushover team, and I think a lot of us thought that coming into this matchup, and you saw tonight. DeMar DeRozan – was the player of the month in February, and DeMar DeRozan was incredible in January as well. Nikola Vucevic has had big games against the Bucks in the playoffs before, so they still have the pieces. And we didn't even mention Zach LaVine. That can make this difficult. So that's what we saw tonight. The big news from tonight, though, the two injuries that the Bucks had to leave the game. So first and foremost, Bobby Portis leaving in the first half. It was very interesting because it happened right in front of us, and he went down, and it looked like, as it happened in real time, like, man, it looked like he got hit in the face, and then he kind of staggered and just laid down on the floor where you're like, yeah, I think he got hit in the face. And then when you see the replay, you could see the blood around his eye, but then you saw his eye and how red it was, like, oh wow, yeah, he really took a shot to the face. So what was your exact eye injury?
So this is crazy. So a month ago, I'm playing pickup hoops at the Milwaukee Athletic Club. And I go up for a rebound, try and tap it out, and I get a finger with significant upward force in my eyeball. And it sounds as bad as it was. I mean, it was awful. So my first thought when I saw Bobby get whacked is that, yes, he's got blood coming down, and I thought he was being treated for a concussion. Yeah. I thought that's why he went back. I thought initially it was, you know, get the blood off, let's clean that thing up, get you back out. And he walked back out to the bench,
yeah.
And then he went back into the locker room. He came out, took some shots at halftime, and then he went with the trainer back to the locker room. And it still may be the case, but I thought he was getting checked for a concussion. I don't know what the NBA's protocols are, but I thought that that's reasonable. When I had the upward force in my eye, I saw stars. I mean, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, it was force. Thankfully, nothing was broken. The other thing I was looking at with Bobby, and I didn't see it. I had binoculars, and I was looking as close as I could. I was looking to see if there was any bruising on the eyeball. And what I mean by that is all the white in your eye is red.
Yeah.
And that can set in over time. Sometimes it comes on really quickly. Sometimes it just it becomes worse.
And, yeah.
So I'll be curious to see where that goes. So what happened to me is I had a lacerated eyeball, which is different than an abrasion on the eyeball. Okay, so to me, an abrasion is almost like a scratch, like a road rash, for lack of a better term, right? It's not significant bleeding. You probably don't need an ointment on it. There's probably very little risk of infection. But he's going to have a series of drops to help control the pressure in his eye so he can see clearly. He's probably got some floaters, right? When I say floaters, it's little specks of pepper that are floating around in front of your face to the left. And then you have to wonder if his pupil is the same size, because your pupil can get stretched out when you take a shot to the face. So if he can avoid having to put like an ointment in his eye throughout the day, that'll drastically improve his ability to see. But I would be very shocked if he didn't have to take a series of drops to help control the pressure. If the pressure builds up, your vision is distorted. Yeah. So you got to keep that under control. With some time, he'll be back on the floor. That's from Mike Budenholzer.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a day or two.
Yeah.
I didn't feel right for about a month, but I had a laceration on my eyeball. They offered stitches, and I said no. So I've got more education on this than anybody should have with a similar injury. But concussion, and then can they control the pressure on his eyeball? Those are the two things I'd be thinking about.
All I want to see is Bobby Portis come back in some rec specs. Because, like, if you think fans love him now, picture Bobby Portis playing in goggles. That just puts it at a whole nother level.
Right. Remember the Bobby Eyes from last
Bobby
year's
Eyes,
playoffs? Right. That was the thing, man.
The T-shirt underneath and the headband, that he's everything that people love about college athletes. Add the rec specs, and it's just impeccable.
This will be interesting. Eye injuries are no joke, man. Like, geez. Like that, for me, it was really rough. It doesn't sound like his is as severe as what I had. I hopped on an exercise bike the day after the injury. In fact, I played four games right after the injury and then had to go to ER, and it just got worse and worse and worse and worse to the point where I lost all vision. And then we had it restored, and now we're back on stable ground. So there is a period of time where you might think, no, I'm good, and then things just start to deteriorate, and that's what they're going to have to monitor with Bobby. But
and oh, by the way, you're looking at a basket and trying to shoot.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's very helpful.
Nothing easy about it.
The big one, though, is the Chris Middleton MCL sprain. And I, quite frankly, I was surprised we even got that much from Bud.
Yeah, Bud was forthright with it.
That immediately, it's an MCL sprain. He's going to have an MRI tomorrow, and we'll learn more then. I was surprised it wasn't just, well, he's going to undergo an MRI, or he'll undergo tests, and we'll have some more answers tomorrow. But look, MCL, ACL, anything attached to that, sprain, whatever it is, whenever you hear those three letters first, you think, oh boy. I have seen anything from, well, it could be 8 days to a couple of weeks, 2 to 4 weeks. I don't have a great sense or feeling that Chris Middleton is going to return in this series, basically, is what we're getting at.
I would agree with that. I'd be really surprised. And then you just, there's nothing given about this series at all. I mean, the Bucks may not advance. But then you start to wonder, like, timeline. Is there a way, is there a chance that he ends up playing against Brooklyn or Boston if the Bucks can move on and how effective would he be, right? And we kind of heard the story of Giannis and what he was dealing with when he came back in the finals after that injury that I thought he was done after I saw the injury against the Hawks. It didn't look as severe. There wasn't that kind of force on Chris's knee, you know, from a player, you know, forcing his leg to bend the wrong way. But it still gives you pause. It makes you wonder, and there are varying degrees of severity, I suppose. But Giannis is a superhuman individual. He's like that, he defied logic in that kind of return. You know, Chris has had some pretty significant injuries before, and it's been kind of a consistent, normal timetable associated with his injuries. Not saying that it's a negative or positive, it's just kind of reality. The big hamstring injury, he's had stuff that he's had to work through. I'd be shocked to see him in this series.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong, but I'd be shocked.
I would be very surprised. Just the fact that we got immediately, it's an MCL sprain, and then when you look into, I mean, typically it is at least 2 weeks that you're looking at, 2 to 8 weeks usually with an MCL sprain. And the way it occurred, too, it was just such an awkward play and collision and landing. And the way he got up and immediately was just kind of like shaking that knee off and limping, and he kept kind of trying to stretch it out and looking down at it. The limp went away a little bit for a defensive possession, but then as soon as they got a timeout and you could see him walking, he was limping again, and then finally just went to the locker room and was limping into the locker room. That was the moment where you're like, yeah, I don't think this was just he knocked knees.
No.
It looks like it is still very much bothering him, that this is something you should probably keep an eye on.
So the pool report is out for the Bobby Portis injury. Did you see this?
No.
You want to go through it?
Yeah.
It is interesting. So the pool report, what happens? Well, certain members of the media are allowed an opportunity to speak with officials following the games. Not everybody, but there is a designated individual. I don't know who the individual is. Eric Name, our good friend Eric Name, got to do the pool report interview with officials. And Eric articulates, with roughly 48 seconds left in the first quarter, Brook Lopez missed a shot around the rim. Bobby Portis and Tristan Thompson went up for a contested rebound. It appears Thompson's left elbow swung away from the ball and hit Portis in the face. Eventually, play stopped for the blood rule because the play caused Portis's eye to bleed. Why was there no foul called in that situation? And the official, crew chief, says, we didn't see it live during the play. Okay. Eric follows up. Once the play was stopped, why was there no review of the play in question? Official says, as per the rule, once a change of possession has occurred, the window to review it is no longer available. Final question from Eric. Now that you've had a chance to see it, did a foul occur on that play? And the crew chief says, it is kind of an inadvertent elbow. If you saw it, you could call a loose ball foul. Versus a flagrant.
Yeah.
The swinging of the elbow foul.
Injuries, the story of the game here. And also Matt Moore, who on Twitter, HP Basketball, notes, Bucks had more second chance points, more points in the paint, more fast break points, more three-pointers, more rebounds, more assists, and twice as many free throw attempts as the Bulls. And still managed to lose the game.
Isn't that crazy? I'm sitting here looking at the stat sheet, and what jumps off the page are the turnovers, right? You know, 15. Honestly, I thought there were more than that. Felt like there were more than that.
Yeah.
But no. He's right. Well, they had more three-pointers, but they also had, you know, the percentage wasn't quite the same, right? The Bulls were much more efficient with their shooting from three.
That was a difference to me as well. The Bulls did not take the high volume of threes they did in Game 1, which I think played into the Bucks' hand, that it was, let's funnel these guys and funnel some of these looks to three-point shooters that we will let you take. We don't trust these guys. The Bulls didn't do that today. 25 threes. They average around 28 a game in the regular season. So they played their game today.
And that's not where you're going to worry about DeRozan either.
No.
I think you took a couple. Stat sheet right in front of me. Yeah, it took two, missed both.
Yeah.
Right? But 15 to 22, look out, man. Like, that dude gets on a heater, and it's tough to stop him.
855-616-1620, the Acunet Mortgage talk and text line. Where do the Bucks go from here with the Chris Middleton injury? More after this on Bucks Talk.
Stick around. Bucks Talk continues next. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. One call, that's all.
Can't tell me that doesn't have some effect. Here's Middleton on the right wing. Step back three on the way.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Count it with a foul. Cash Money Middleton with a chance at the four-point play. It is a five-point game with a 1:30 to go in the third.
Third quarter was Chris Middleton's quarter, 4 for 4 from three, and he and Giannis combined to score 25 of the Bucks' 31 points. But the story is the Chris Middleton injury, as we just went over, and MCL sprain. I don't think we're going to see him again this series. You don't think we're going to see him again this series. So where do the Bucks go from here?
Yeah.
Who do you put in the starting lineup in his absence?
It's a clutch bucket that's going to the bench here with Chris Middleton out. This is a really interesting decision because, you know, without Brook Lopez, you had Bobby Portis start a ton of games for the Bucks this year, which, of course, depletes your bench a little bit. I think, assuming a healthy Portis, and I think you're going to see Portis, but
yeah.
It is, right? You've got to get this figured out with his eye. I'm struggling between, I mean, it's three individuals, right? It's Grayson Allen, it's Pat Connaughton, it's Bobby Portis. I mean, those are your options. You're not going to move Serge Ibaka into that role. And if I watch the way the Bucks played tonight, they played some of the most inspired basketball with three or four guards on the floor. So if you assume Giannis is your four and Brook is your five, you got Drew. You can go Grayson. He's been there before. And maybe it doesn't matter as much who starts the game as who finishes the game.
Well, right, yeah.
But it does set a tone, and it forces the Bulls to kind of, you know, react with their matchup. So I'm trying to figure out what puts the most stress on the Bulls. Is it a guard who can kind of, you know, dictate tempo a little bit, keep you moving, fight off screens, knock down open shots? Or is it a guy like Portis who can step outside and keep you honest and is a little bit more of an enforcer? You know, the Bulls are kind of slinky, right? They've got some length. They've got some speed. They've got some get up and down in their game. They can pack the paint on D. I don't know what the best option is, assuming that Bobby Portis is healthy.
I would, I think I would go with Pat Connaughton just because you need something from Pat Connaughton here. That's another guy when we talk about outside of your big names, you didn't really get a whole lot. Pat Connaughton tonight, 3 points and 1 of 6 from the field. That was on a three-pointer that he made that shot. But he's a guy, he was so great the first half of the season, and he hasn't been the same guy since. So maybe giving him those minutes would kind of jumpstart him and get him there. So I would say put Pat Connaughton in this.
You know, and just 3 rebounds as well. I mean,
yeah.
We've seen nights from Pat where it's just like, his shooting was off, but
he had 8
look
rebounds
at the hustle plays, right? And he's an excellent rebounding guard. You know, I think Grayson gives you a similar amount of hustle. You know, they're both pretty strong. They're similar size. Pat, I think, is a little more of a leaper, but Grayson can certainly get off the floor. They both shot the ball well enough from three where I think you're comfortable with them taking those shots. They're not holistically different, but those are your guard options and Portis if you want to go big. I mean, that's about it. I mean, Javon Carter is not entering the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Neither is Serge Ibaka. And no, I don't think Jordan Nwora is as well, as much as you might like to see him in the lineup. They want to spark the offense. You know he'll chuck. He'll put it up. But this will be interesting. What puts the most stress on the Bulls for a greater portion of the game might be your answer to that question. But the Bucks played better small today. So if I had to guess, I would lean toward a smaller lineup from Mike Budenholzer on Friday.
And injuries are suddenly becoming the story of the postseason for the Bucks. That Bud said going into the postseason, we're in a pretty good spot. We could be better, but we're in a good spot health-wise. And now all of a sudden, oh, George Hill's on the injury report and hasn't played in either game. And before the game today, Bud said it's not great, but you know, we're hoping it's not long-term. But we've heard that before with George Hill. So,
were you counting on him much, though?
In terms of minutes or...
Yeah, like where does he fit? You know what I mean?
He was going to play a lot. I think we've seen that from Bud, that he trusts him, that Javon Carter wasn't going to play. And I know, and I'm one of them, that there's a lot of people that think, well, there's a lot of good that Javon Carter brings. But he, outside of this George Hill injury, I don't think Javon Carter was going to see any floor action for this team unless something like that happened. So I do think we're going to see quite a bit of George Hill in the postseason. Now, whether or not other guys have moved past him, that's a different discussion. But Bud trusts George Hill and Wesley Matthews. So I think those were two guys he was going to lean on quite a bit. So it is a big blow for the coach to all of a sudden hear the playoffs and I don't have this guy. And now I lose Chris Middleton, maybe for the remainder of the series, maybe further. And I lose Bobby Portis for who knows how long. Yeah. All of a sudden the health that we thought was...
Find the Crew Talk podcast wherever you get podcasts. 94.5 ESPN is WKTI and WKTI HD Milwaukee, a good Karma Brands radio station.
I don't see the Bulls bench contributing much here because Lonzo Ball is out. Caruso goes to your starting lineup. Where do they go? They're not getting point production. They're getting, I'll give you a break, kind of production. You know what I mean? Like guys on the floor, but they're getting enough out of their starters where they don't need buckets out of guys off the bench. I feel like the Bucks need more out of their bench, and it's now depleted with George Hill's injury and with the assumption that Chris is going to be out. Now you pull another body into the starting lineup, and you're not going to go any deeper than you have unless you just need some hustle minutes from Thanasis or, you know, it's the end of a quarter. But meaningful minutes, guys who haven't seen the floor are not going to see the floor. They're just not. And, you know, Javon Carter's an interesting guy, but he's kind of an off-ball small guard. You know what I mean? Like, knock down one of your two open shots and play good defense. He was struggling with Zach LaVine tonight in his opportunity on the floor. I don't know that George Hill would be much better, but certainly gives you an option to have Drew play off the ball as a legit ball-handling option, which is another thing that you lose with Chris, a guy who can, you know, just sort of take the ball from, you know, one side of the half-court line and get you into your offense on the other. So you've got another body out of that mix, which puts a little bit more on a guy like Giannis to get it done.
Bucks fall to the Bulls here in Game 2. The series now shifts to Chicago, tied at a game apiece. We'll wrap up the show next on Bucks Talk.
The Hardwood Homilies continue after this. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Just like the listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
Chicago taking down the Bucks here tonight on their home floor as Chicago wins in Milwaukee, where they had lost 9 consecutive games prior to this one tonight, but they find a way to beat the Bucks here in an improbable fashion.
Yeah, 114-110 Bulls win here at Fiserv Forum, and we now head to Chicago for the weekend. Friday night, 7:30 tip for game number 3. Sunday, 12 noon. The ideal tip time.
Yeah, I don't like that, man. Like,
no, I'm fine with it.
I don't mind it for myself and for Bucks Talk and for you and for those who like Brewers baseball, which will be on in the evening on Sunday, which is kind of rare. I just don't love it for the Bucks because pre-dinner basketball just
historically has not been good.
No, but not at all. Maybe the playoffs will yield something a little bit different, but that was the game I circled at the start of this series saying if the Bulls are going to get one, game 4 in Chicago on Sunday afternoon, brunch basketball, I didn't have a good feeling about that particular game. I still don't have a good feeling about that particular game.
I feel like it was 2. I was going to say, I feel like the first game against the Heat last year.
It was afternoon game. I remember that.
Yeah, it was a 2 o'clock tip last year.
I remember because I was watching while my girls were playing soccer. I was standing on the sidelines, you know, screaming in plays and coverages and whatnot and watching Jimmy Butler go to the rack and send the game to overtime.
We do know the series will return to Milwaukee.
That's
on
true.
Wednesday. We don't know what time that game is going to be, but look, you can't win in 6 if you don't lose 2, and Bucks are trying to throw some parties out here in Deer District and on the plaza, and the weather hasn't cooperated, so maybe things will pick up on Wednesday.
No, really just doing the city of Milwaukee and
right,
the legion of Bucks fans around the area a favor by getting this thing going back again in Milwaukee. Crank it up. Who needs a sweep, man? That's too easy.
Look, it's obviously we cross our fingers. We hope for good news on Chris Middleton tomorrow after the MRI, but I think it's very unlikely. We both agree, very unlikely you're going to see him again in this series. I hope I'm wrong, but I do also feel like it happened after the Nuggets game in late January, where this team was just embarrassed on this floor, and there was a closed-door meeting by the coaching staff and Bud with the players, and the message was basically enough. Like, it's time for us
quit
to
playing
start,
with your food.
Right, it's time for us to start playing here. Do you guys want to be serious? And they responded. This feels like this is one of those moments, again, where it's two games in the playoffs, so basically 40 turnovers, and your stars playing like this, that the message is probably the same of, you happy with this? Enough. Time to turn it on and win this series.
No, you're right. And stars got to play like stars for the Bucks to win, and it's got to be a little more contribution from the bench. And the Bucks got a lot of that last year, no doubt. Yeah, there is no switch, right? I mean, you can't just turn it on and win. The Bucks were so much better than Orlando in the bubble, but they were playing awful basketball going into the bubble, and they played awful basketball at times in that series. And then, of course, things just went to hell in a handbasket against the Miami Heat. So, no, there is no switch. We've seen that before. They'll be fine. They're just too talented. They are talented. There's no doubt. But so is the team they're facing, and this Eastern Conference it's
loaded.
It's as congested as we've ever seen it.
I guess shame on me too, because I had had the conversation with a few of our teammates the other day. Of you know what, I'm not convinced that we're not going to see four sweeps in the first round of the Eastern Conference. And now maybe we'll see three sweeps, but the Bucks will not be a sweep.
Yeah, no, certainly possible. And I would not have thought that Boston would have a 2-0 series lead, even though I think the Boston Celtics are a better team. But they protected their home floor, right? So the two teams that have won away in the Eastern Conference, Philadelphia on a last-second three tonight in Toronto. Remember saying after game one, that series is going to look different when it goes to Toronto. You got to win away from your home arena before things really get serious. Well, the Bulls did that here tonight in game two, and Philadelphia did it in Toronto in game three. They're one win away from closing that thing out. And now Brooklyn's got a chance to take Boston home, where they'll try and follow suit. So things get different when you win away from your home floor. Now the Bucks have to do what Chicago did.
Friday night is game number three in this series. The winner takes a 2-1 edge as the series shifts to Chicago. It is a 7:30 tip on Friday. Our network coverage begins at 7 o'clock. And, of course, as soon as the game wraps up, more Bucks Talk presented by Gruber Law Offices. My thanks to everybody back at Radio City, to Max, Isaac, and Rachel for producing the show. All of you for hanging out for the last hour as well. You've been listening to Gruber. You've been listening to Bucks Talk presented by Gruber Law Offices.
Adopt US Kids present.